The Packers' preseason schedule is announced, but that's taking a back seat to the NFL draft discussion. Who are the realistic first-round targets for the Packers? We'll find out with Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for the NFL draft. And to do that, we have a guest joining us on the show, as he does every month.
Expert interview.
We have Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog joining us for his monthly engagement. Scott, how you doing today?
I'm great, Brian. How are you doing?
Very good. Glad to have you, as always. So today with Scott McKenna, what we're going to do is go through the Packers' realistic first-round options in the NFL draft. And we set some ground rules. So, Scott, if you could bear with me, I'll kind of go through this for a second. What we did was we basically took a top 15 list, and obviously it varies from site to site, from person to person, if you were to ask the top 15 players in the NFL draft. But we went to CBS Sports or NFL Draft Scout. They're kind of the same thing. We took their top 15 list. Now, I'm just going to throw these names out there very quickly. So we're throwing these guys out of the equation. Laremy Tunsil, Jalen Ramsey, Joey Bosa, Miles Jack, Jared Goff, DeForest Buckner, Carson Wentz, Ezekiel Elliott, Ronnie Stanley, Vernon Hargraves, Laquan Treadwell, Darren Lee, Shaq Lawson, Sheldon Rankins, and Reggie Ragland. We're assuming those players are not going to be available for sure for the Green Bay Packers. And we're going to go through the next, what's left, the best option the Packers have when they're on the clock. And some of the guys we're going to go through are not going to be available either, but we're going to see who they got. But Scott, let's start with this. Two guys in the top 15 list I mentioned here, Reggie Ragland and Darren Lee, both inside linebackers at a position the Packers sorely need. In the chance that one of these guys were to fall to the 27th pick, would they be at the top of your list, hypothetically?
They would definitely be in the top five. There's absolutely no doubt about it, especially Darren Lee. You know, every year I do a mock Packers draft, if you will, before the start of the college season, just before Labor Day. And last year I had Darren Lee as my ideal target for the Packers to select. And really, even after the season last year, I thought that he was still a target for the Packers. But then with his performance at the combine, people just get so enamored with speed that I just fancy that he's absolutely going to be a top 20 pick, maybe not top 15, but a top 20 pick. And he'd fit into either a 3-4 or a 4-3 system. So he definitely would be a top one or two player for me. Should he be available? Ragland, you got to just love him as a thumper. I sometimes question whether he's going to be a three-down linebacker. But as a thumper in the run game and a guy that can come on the blitz from the inside, he absolutely would be a target and most likely to be in my top five players that I would have my eye on come the 27th pick of the draft.
It's interesting. This is how crazy things get. The last guest I had on the show on Wednesday, Steve Palazzolo of Pro Football Focused, he didn't even think Darren Lee was a first-round draft choice. So, I mean, it's crazy how people think about these prospects where we're not even going to talk about Darren Lee because he's in somebody's top 15 list. He's not even a first-round draft pick, according to another person. You never know what's going to happen. But anyway, just for the sake of argument here, we took out these top 15 players. Scott and I are going to go back and forth between the rest of the players available and who the Packers should target. So, Scott, let's start with you. Taking out these 15 people, between everybody that's left, who is your ideal first-round target for the Packers in the first round?
I'd say Jalen Smith. And when Jalen Smith is healthy, and I realize it's a big asterisk right now, he's my number one player in this draft. He's not just a Pro Bowl quality player, but I believe he firmly has Hall of Fame football traits. I know that's bold, but I strongly feel like he's the best linebacker that I've watched in the college game in a long time. He does it all. He gets sideline to sideline, attacks the line of scrimmage. He takes on blockers. He plays as though he's the fastest player on the field, and the dude simply does not miss tackles. And I just look at the Packers, and I look at the way they're missing that do-it-all linebacker that can roam the field like a Clay Matthews could do, and to use them interchangeably. And I love the way Smith drops in coverage with sublime confidence, and he can rush the passer off the edge with brilliance. And if Jalen Smith is healthy, and I realize there's a real good chance he could miss this year. But if you're confident he's going to come back, he's a can't-miss prospect. And I realize that's a big if. But if the medical recheck goes well next week and you're certain that he will recover, even if you have to wait until 2017, I think you have to draft Jalen Smith. And the thought of Jalen Smith and Clay Matthews attacking from the linebacker spot for the next five to 7 years, for my mind, it's absolutely salivating.
Boy, oh boy. I am very hard-pressed to invest a first-round draft choice into a guy like Jalen Smith in terms of, here's my philosophy on the first round, is you can't make, you can't take that chance, I don't think, in the first round. I would be okay taking Jalen Smith in the second round if you're comfortable he's, healthy or whatever. But I think there's so many other good players that why are you going to take a guy that might not ever play? I mean, again, depending on the outcome of this medical recheck here. That's just too risky for me, don't you think?
Well, that's a common thought when I talk to people. I think you can get yourself insurance later in the draft with a guy at inside linebacker, and one of them might be Schobert from Wisconsin. You could look at Brothers from Missouri, Scooby Wright from Arizona. There's other guys that you can get later on that might be an insurance policy. But I just look at Jalen Smith, and then again, if we find out next week that the nerve isn't going to heal properly, or that there are significant long-term concerns about his long-term, future and or recovery, well, then you don't select him in the first round. But by all indications, Smith has recently been a beast in the locker room. He's been a beast in the weight room. And Brian, one of the things that I find to be extremely noteworthy, the Packers spent some significant time with him at the combine. And if you saw their pro day, it was their representatives that were the ones holding the measuring tape at the pro day. They wanted an up-close and personal view, in my opinion, of Jalen Smith. So if Dr. McKenzie, who, I know Dr. McKenzie personally, absolutely just an authentic, genuine, first-class human being. He helped me out with some past injuries in my life. If he's going to clear Jalen Smith, and, it's been documented previously that McKenzie can be conservative in his assessments. Well, and maybe rightfully so, but if he's going to clear him, then I think that Jalen Smith is the best player on the board for the Green Bay Packers. It's 27th pick if he's around, and whether that means he's available come December for the stretch run this year, or if you've got to wait for him until 2017, and you're going to have a guy that for 10 years is going to be manning the middle of your defense. And arguably having the potential to be the best linebacker in football, and I genuinely feel that way about Jalen Smith. And I've felt that way since the first time I saw him play. I remember the day it was when he played Air Force. I was at the game in Colorado Springs, and Smith was just the fastest player on the field, and when he hit you, you felt it. He hit the ground, and I've kind of been jonesing to have him be a Green Bay Packer for since that moment. Now that it's a reality, or a possibility, I should say, I really hope it becomes a reality.
It's an interesting conversation. I definitely agree with you. When watching him play, he's an ideal inside linebacker prospect, and if healthy, I mean, he showed the athleticism to be that element that the Packers have been missing from the position for pretty much ever, it seems like. So I would
Ray
like
Nitschke, right?
Exactly. Since Ray Nitschke. Okay, so we're going to go through my ideal guy. So taking now outside the top 15, if those 15 guys are gone, and this is an interesting one as well, because my top draft pick is not exactly a need for the Packers, but I'm going with the standpoint that my pick would be Jack Conklin, the offensive tackle from Michigan State, who I realize the Packers already have their starting left tackle and right tackle in place, as well with the whole offensive line for that standpoint. But I think Conklin is the can't-miss guy who's next. He's a guy you could plug in, if necessary, anywhere on the offensive line except for center. I mean, taking a look at, of course, the injury situation the Packers had last year, Blaga was injured, Bakhtiari was injured, and then you look at the future, and both Lang and Sitton are free agents, as well as Bakhtiari and J.C. Treader. Somebody's going to be gone next year. This is a guy who, maybe Conklin would have a hard time getting on the field in 2016, but he would be a starter guaranteed from 2017 on, and in fact, a very, very good one. He's a can't-miss prospect, in my opinion.
It's so funny, and I love that you mention him, because it to tie this into Smith, what we're doing, when I see a lot of people and who they want to select in round one, and I see a lot of people mentioning a wide receiver, I see people mentioning offensive line. Our offensive line is set for 2016. Mm-hmm. So for people that really want to draft offensive line in the first round, yet then they say, well, why are we going to do Jalen Smith if he? Why are we going to draft Jalen Smith if he can't play in year one? Right? It's the same thing, right? For me, it's the same thing, and that's why I say if Jalen Smith is going to be healthy, our outside of inside linebacker, our starting lineup is set. Maybe an outside linebacker if somebody wanted to challenge Nick Perry, potentially on the defensive line, somebody could step in and win a spot next to Mike Daniels and Metroy Guyon. But the reality is for the most part, our line is set, and our starting unit is set. So that's the piece that I look at it to add one more nugget as to why I'm adding to my enamoration with Jalen Smith, if you will. But Conklin, great player. I see him having a long career as well, but he doesn't make an impact on the Packers. I hope not anyways in 2016, because then that would mean an injury.
Yeah, I guess I just look at the long view with him in terms of that, he could be there for years on end, whereas Jalen Smith could possibly never take the field for the Green Bay Packers. I don't know. Obviously, that's a discussion for medical experts beyond our expertise, so... but anyway, Scott, the next guy on your list, assuming Jalen Smith would not be available.
And this is one that I'll probably get beat up for, but I have Robert Nkundichi as the next guy. And yes, he had the off-the-field issues. I always laugh and joke at the thought of off-the-field issues, because generally speaking, it can be tough to get in trouble in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I've tried in my past, and it can be tough. I had him as my number four player in the draft, behind Jalen Smith, behind Jalen Ramsey, and behind Miles Jack in season. Then he had the off-the-field issues, and a lot of people got concerned. But the reality about him is that he's physically dominating. He's a defensive lineman with Pro Bowl potential. He's got terrific burst off the snap. I think he's the top defensive lineman from just his on-the-field performance. He's the top defensive lineman in this draft, in my opinion. He wins with both power and quickness, which you got to love. The one thing about him, the knock on him might be that he's inconsistent at times. He can get lackadaisical. But in my opinion, you stick him next to Mike Daniels' motor, and I feel he's going to be firing in all cylinders. And, you know, as a sidebar, a quick tangent, by the way, one of the things I'm really excited about in 2016 is that with BJ Raji's departure and Mike Daniels' contract, Daniels has now emerged as the leader of this defensive line. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, I would be absolutely stoked with the Nkemdiche selection, because Daniels isn't going to tolerate anything less than maximum output. And if Nkemdiche is giving his best effort, again, in my opinion, he's unquestionably the best defensive lineman in the draft.
I agree with you from the standpoint in that he has a very high ceiling. You see the flashes of it out there on the field. My standpoint, I guess, is that if it's the same thing as Jalen Smith. I can't take that chance in the first round when there's so many other good players out there that this is going to be a guy who's not going to live up to his potential. He came out of high school as like the number one prospect in the nation and just kind of did average for the Ole Miss Rebels there. He flashes brilliance, he flashes dominance, but just isn't, you know, out there the whole time dominating like he should. And that prevents me again from taking him in the first round. I would take him in the second round, but after you've already gotten a sure thing in the first.
You know, it's funny because what is a sure thing, right? Like it wasn't Daytona
Jack
Jones.
Conklin's.
It wasn't Nick Perry. I don't know what a sure thing is. It's the other thing about Nkemdiche, and I'm sure I'll end up saying this a couple of times here, over the rest of this discussion. But the first thing I always turn to, what was his biggest game of the year? For him, it was at Alabama. He single-handedly dominated the line of scrimmage against Alabama. It felt like, on the defensive side of the ball, he just destroyed Alabama. I think he was even put in on the offensive side of the field as a running back on occasion. He's just a great athlete. And, I mean, he destroyed Alabama in the biggest game of his career. When everybody was watching and he handed them their only loss of the season, and really it was like Nkemdiche against the entire Alabama offense, it felt like at times. And, I just remember drooling at the thought of him, and never even thinking that it'd be a possibility that he could potentially, drop to where the Packers were selecting, because I just I firmly thought he'd be a top five selection. So a lot of people make dumb decisions when they're 21. From what I've been able to research, the guy might have had too much to drink one night. I know a lot of people like that have all turned out pretty well. So that for me, I can overlook the off the field issues. I'm going to buy into Mike Daniels being the leader of this defensive line and really trying to get maximum output out of Nkemdiche if he's the selection.
It's an interesting thought. You're selling me pretty hard there, and I like it. All right, my number two guy, assuming Jack Conklin wouldn't be available. I'm going next with Baylor defensive tackle Andrew Billings, who I think is an ideal nose tackle. And for me, the most impressive thing about him is he's a guy that plays behind the line of scrimmage. He is so strong, and this is a guy who's set records in the state of Texas for high school weightlifting, and you can see that when he's out on the field. He just moves guys backwards, and he's obviously not the best pass-rushing defensive tackle in the world, but I think he is a guy who can make an occasional sack, but he's making plays behind the line of scrimmage. He's making tackles behind the line of scrimmage on running backs, and he just the arm use. He just locks guys out, and he doesn't have the longest arms in the world, but you'd be surprised just by watching film. That you would think he does, because he uses his arms so effectively and plays with leverage that I think is just amazing. He's an ideal replacement for BJ Raji, I think. Could be an improvement over BJ Raji. So he would be my number two guy.
It's funny because I too have Billings on my list. And You're right. The Packers were surprised, clearly, at the hiatus of B.J. Raji. And it caught them off guard. He was, in my opinion, it looks like he was in the 2016 plans. And they were unprepared to replace him, is the way I view it. And I too believe that Billings most closely resembles him. He's quick off the snap, total bully, just a bully in one-on-one situations. And it appears as though he understands leverage. He's so powerful. And, you know, simply stated, when he's in a one-on-one battle, he moves defense, or he moves the offensive lineman. And he does it with such a possessed force, if you will. You know, and I see him as a guy that could potentially be a three-down defender. You know, and somebody that could give one thing that I would think the Packers could really use, and I think Billings would offer, is I think the guy could give you an immediate interior pass rush and the early down base defense. And that's a dimension that this defense has lacked at times in recent years. And for that reason, I think Billings is he makes sense. And really, if I was a gun to my head today and I had to predict a player that I thought Ted Thompson was going to select with the number 27 pick, and again, draft is still a couple weeks away, he'd probably be the guy that I would predict Ted Thompson would select in the first round.
Yeah, just interesting enough here, both Scott and I both submitted to each other our top five options outside the top 15. Andrew Billings was the only overlap between our top five. So maybe that's the place we find common ground, and maybe that's the same conversation happening in the Packers draft room in terms of who's the one guy everybody can agree on. Might end up being Andrew Billings, so interesting there. But Scott, your number three guy, after Jalen Smith, after Robert Kendiche, your number three guy.
I have Kevin Dodd, and as you know, and as I earlier stated, I pay attention to how somebody plays when the lights are on. I mean, the big games, the games that most accurately simulate what NFL competition is all about. In those games, Dodd was an absolute monster last year. And, you know, I'm not overly interested in how a player performs in the cupcake non-conference games that we see where some people rack up all those stats. Those games aren't the ones that wow me. It's the prime time games. Those are the ones that with the NFL type intensity. Those are the ones that win me over. They woo me. And against Notre Dame this year, Dodd, tremendous. I think he had 3.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks. You know, against North Carolina, who was a team that I thought was underrated for most of the year.
Division champ.
Yeah, 1.5 tackles for loss and a sack. The two BCS games, was there a better player in the BCS games than Kevin Dodd? I don't know. And that was against Oklahoma and Alabama, who you know, for at that time appeared to be the two hottest teams in college football. I know that Clemson ended up beating Oklahoma, but he crushed the line of scrimmage. You know, he combined for 8.5 sacks or 8.5 tackles for loss. In 4 sacks in those 2 games, and that's against the elite competition in college football. And then you take a look at the whole stat line, and the ACC was not a pushover last year. And what he accomplished last year, 24 tackles for loss, 12.5 sacks, and he did it with such impressive fashion. You know, his length is so disruptive. He wins with speed. He uses his arms to grab and pull to create separation. In some ways, he reminds me a little bit of Julius Peppers. I see him as a guy who could drop in space. And at times, they had a great defensive line. But there were at times that he commanded the extra attention. And when that happened, he still controlled the line of scrimmage. In the run game, he strings plays to the outside. He uses his arms and his length to be able to hold off the offensive lineman. And you can't block him with the tight end. So in short, for me, I see Dodd as a first-class athlete and somebody that could really benefit from having a year to sit behind Julius Peppers or to learn from Julius Peppers. He'd probably play more snaps than Peppers at this stage of the career, and I really think that Dodd has the upside to be an elite pass rusher in this league.
Kevin Dodd was the story of the national championship game, the way he played against – the University of Alabama. He almost single-handedly won that game for Clemson. Obviously, Alabama won. Here's my devil's advocate, though, is that I'm worried he could be another Nick Perry in terms of a guy who's worthy of being an NFL roster and a rotational guy for sure, but a poor fit as, you know, a guy who might end up being an ideal 4-3 defensive end and kind of just an ill fit for the Packers. How do you respond to that?
I'd say, you know, you look at some of these 3-4 backers that they're utilized properly. And this isn't a knock on Dom Capers or Mike McCarthy or the Packers staff. But would Terrell Suggs fit an ideal 3-4 outside linebacker? Maybe not, right? But he's potentially a Hall of Famer. Chandler Jones, does he have the body of an outside linebacker playing in a 3-4 defense? Probably not, right? But he's a Pro Bowler. Right, so I think it's largely in how you use him. I think he's capable of dropping. He's not going to be the guy though that you want covering the tight end. He's the guy that you want to either be standing up and coming after the quarterback, or on a third down, you want that guy putting his hand in the dirt and you want him attacking with precise precision and coming aggressively. And that's when, you know, when I look at Dodd and where he can be best. You know, he's a pass rusher. And just like we've seen some of those other names that I've mentioned, they may not be the guy that is, you know, 6'3", 255 pounds that we ideally see at linebacker. But I think there's a way to be able to utilize a guy like Dodd and just his overall length at that outside linebacker spot.
All right, my number three choice after Conklin and Andrew Billings is Jaron Reed, the defensive lineman from Alabama. And with him, you're not getting a flashy guy. In fact, he kind of reminds me in a way, we're going back a ways, in the same way that Ryan Pickett was a first-round draft choice. Obviously, not of the Green Bay Packers. He ended up, you know, being drafted by the St. Louis Rams and later signed with the Green Bay Packers. But that kind of guy who you can rely on to be a run stuffer for your defense and a kind of guy who's going to be there for a decade plus and just be a run stuffer and a guy who makes a lot of tackles for a defensive lineman. He's not going to make a lot of sacks. He's not that kind of guy. But he is an anchor on your defensive line, can play up and down the defensive line from nose tackle to five technique. I like that from him. I think there's better options in terms of, you know, for me, I would take Conklin or Billings ahead of him if they were available. But Jaron Reed, he's a safe first round draft pick. Scott?
Yeah, I agree. You know, you got to love his play in the run game. Non-existent in the pass game. And with that said, I'm expecting big things out of Mike Pinal when he returns to the lineup after his suspension this year. I feel like we've invested 2 years in him, and he's really grown. And when you're in a draft and develop, arena as far as building your roster, and Pennell, I understand, wasn't drafted, but sometimes one of the joys that Ted Thompson brings to the roster is an undrafted player. But I think Pennell is ready to take that next step. And ultimately, when we start looking at the guys that can make an impact this year, you know, Reed would certainly be a guy that would help in an NFC North division where, you know, the Bears are going to pound the ball at you and try to slow the game down and run it 30 to 35 times. So the Vikings are going to do the same thing. And Reed fits there. There's no doubt about it. But I just feel like from an impact perspective, if we're going to talk about what can they do for us now, what can they do for us this year, he's going to be a solid player. But, I feel like the Packers, with the traits that he brings and the talents that he brings, I feel the Packers are in a good spot with having Pennell and Guyon, who aren't just going to be there for this year, but they're going to be there for next year as well. And I think that they're best suited for the same skills that that Reed would bring for the roster. And that's why I have him just outside my top five, maybe as my number seven or eight guy.
Yeah. Scott, we're running out of time here. And your number four guy is somebody we've already talked about, Andrew Billings. Just, you know, we've already discussed him in depth, so we'll kind of gloss him over. But your top five guy, your final one.
Yeah, my next guy is A'shaun Robinson. And, you know, it's a tough debate between him and Kenny Clark for me. And, you know, it's a, it's, It's a strong internal struggle, if you will. Admittedly, I toggle back and forth between the two of them. Both are three-down players, both make plays in the backfield, in both the run game and the pass game. And ultimately, I lean towards Robinson's three-year run. And I prefer the way Robinson plays laterally. I feel like he gets up and down the line of scrimmage better than Clark in the run game. Mm-hmm. He's got the quickness to chase plays down from behind. He plays with, you know, what I see as outstanding hustle. He's consistent. He has great length. He holds the point of attack in the run game. And ultimately, I see him where he may not be the pass rusher that Clark is. He's certainly a three-down player. And I think he'd add an interior pass rush on third down. And, again, it may not be the same way that Clark would bring on a third down pass rush, but I do see Robinson as a guy that could make an impact, in the passing game and pass defense as well.
Yeah, just to round things off here, my number four and five players here after Conklin, Billings, and Jaron Reed would be Kenny Clark, who Scott just alluded to. I like him above A'shaun Robinson. Not that I don't like A'shaun Robinson, but I think Kenny Clark is a guy. I see him almost, his ceiling could be that of a Kawan Short of the Carolina Panthers, and that really intrigues mm-hmm. me. He doesn't have quite as long of arms, which I think is the one thing that prevents him from, you know, maybe being a poor man's Kawan Short. But I think that possibility is there. And then my number five guy rounding things out here, Josh Doctson, the wide receiver from TCU, and I understand the Packers have more than enough depth at the wide receiver position, but Josh Doctson, to me, he's kind of like he's the element that's been missing ever since Greg Jennings left Green Bay. They have the big, tall, wide outside wide receiver with Jordy Nelson. They've got the quick, fast one with Randall Cobb, but they don't have the deep threat. And I think Josh Doctson can be the guy who can stretch the field and catch the deep pass and be a real big element. And I think he's arguably the best wide receiver in this year's draft class. That's why I like him. He's going to take a little bit of development because he played in that air raid offense at TCU. That's not exactly pro style. So that he would, you know, would take a little time to develop, but I like him.
You know, it's interesting. The Doctson to me reminds me of another guy that, you know, came from a similar offense. He reminds me of Terrence Williams, who plays for Dallas now. And he definitely would be a great red zone target. He can get over the top. He would add a dimension to the offense that is just already littered with weapons. And I hope that some of the stuff that we're talking about him potentially bringing might be stuff that Jared Cook is going to bring to the team as well this year.
True.
But he is just going to be a lethal mismatch problem for a lot of defenses, and I'd agree with you. I have him as my number one wide receiver right now. And the other thing about Kenny Clark that needs to be mentioned, because I had him as a top 20 guy in the, you know, throughout the college season, I saw him as a top 20 player.
Mm-hmm.
So the thought of him being around is something that when you watched him play, you wonder like what has changed? Like why are people seeing him as a guy that, you know, now might be drafted between picks 25 and 40 when, you know, during the season, I just saw him as a guy that was just completely dominant. And what I guess is a down year in the Pac-12. And one of the things that I do have is a bit of a concern with him is, you know, he wasn't really all that productive prior to this year. And then this year when the Pac-12 was just a little bit down, he was, I think it was 10 and a half sacks or whatever, but you know, the guy plays with such pizzazz. He brings a fun energy to the huddle. There's no doubt about it. He appears to be a real likable guy, and was really a true presence in the heart of the UCLA defense. And then you look at the history that the Packers have had over the last couple of years with drafting UCLA players and Dayton Jones and Jonathan Franklin and Hunley of last year. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's clearly been a little bit of a run or a connection between them as a college university and the Packers, scouts. So definitely a target. There's no doubt. I have him as my number six guy. That's a real fun discussion, though.
Yeah. For what it's worth, Kenny Clark might be the youngest prospect in this year's draft class, just 20 years old right now. So there's kind of that feeling that you could really develop him into something special in due time. So for what it's worth, Scott, we obviously didn't agree on a whole lot of players. I mean, there's some overlap there, but I think you can always have a productive discussion as well when you respect each other's opinions, and I respect yours.
Likewise, man. I think you do. This time of year, you really shine, and I love tuning in to you, and it's a great honor for me to play a small part of this discussion. So thank you for having me on, man. And as always, go Pack go, and I'll be hitting you up on Twitter here over the next month to share some ideas.
Sounds good, man. Take care.
Cheers.
Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack Blog joining us here at Railbird Central on a Friday morning. Let's continue on with the rest of the show.
Packers news of the day.
So the big news that happened on Thursday, I guess it was, the release of the NFL's preseason schedule. And, you know, there were a few things that weren't surprises. We knew that the Packers were going to play in the Hall of Fame game against the Indianapolis Colts. We knew that. Going to take place August 7th. In fact, it's the only one in which a firm date has been, you know, confirmed here for the NFL's preseason. And we also knew that the Packers were going to play on the road for their final preseason game, because that same weekend they've agreed to host the University of Wisconsin Badgers in that neutral site game against LSU. That's going to be a really unique experience at Lambeau Field for the college football season opener. So that'll be really exciting. So the Packers going to their preseason finale is going to be at Kansas City, a team that they've frequently played against that final week of the preseason. So we've learned everything in between then. The Packers home preseason opener the Indianapolis Colts there, the Hall of Fame game. They're coming home against the Cleveland Browns. Following that up, their second home preseason game. So Milwaukee season ticket holders will see the Oakland Raiders. And then so the wrapping up the preseason on the road for two straight games, first at San Francisco and then at Kansas City. Like I said, no firm dates for anything but the, you know, the Hall of Fame game so far. Those are things we're still kind of waiting on, but the opponents and the order and everything is announced, and it's confirmed and it's out there, and as the NFL released its entire preseason schedule yesterday. So we know all those kind of things. And here's the one interesting kind of connection here that I saw on Twitter. I think it was from one of the guests we just recently had on the show, former NFL scout Mark Lillibridge, former Packers scout now with the St. Louis radio station. We were talking to him about Jared Cook just a few episodes ago, but he mentioned on Twitter having five preseason games, that might be a little bit of a bargaining chip for the Green Bay Packers in terms of signing undrafted free agents. That's something they can promote and say, hey, you're going to come to this team as an undrafted free agent. We have five preseason. Everybody hates five preseason games. Everybody does. Me included. I mean, but the one thing it does do, I mean, if you're a guy who's, you know, a long shot NFL player, that is one more opportunity for you to get out on a field. In fact, if you're playing in the Hall of Fame game, this is going to be nationally televised. In addition, the other ones could be as well. You know, there's lots of opportunities for you to get a lot of eyes on you from other NFL decision makers and just people nationwide looking at you and being in the spotlight and getting that opportunity to strut yourself. And even if you end up getting cut by the Green Bay Packers, somebody out there could be watching your film, and there's just one more opportunity for that to do so. So that was kind of the most intriguing thing for me. With the announcement of, you know, five preseason games, which, you know, most people feel like it's almost like three too many. I'm in the camp that two preseason games, you're good. You know, there's no reason to put these guys at undue risk out there. So why not, you know, reduce the preseason? Obviously, I understand why they don't. It's the money aspect, and you know, three more games are bringing in millions of dollars every, you know, game that's held. So when you're talking tickets sold and broadcast rights and all advertising and all those kind of things, there's a lot of worth there. So anyway, that was the big news yesterday. NFL draft news. The Packers are bringing in BYU wide receiver Mitch Matthews for a, you know, one of the 30 players they're bringing into Lambeau Field for a visit prior to the NFL draft. You know, obviously this is a late round draft pick. This is not a first round kind of guy, but an interesting player nonetheless. He's like 6'4", 6'5", so real tall wide receiver. You know, he's kind of in that Jordy Nelson, Jeff Janis mold in terms of, you know, tall wideouts. And just interestingly enough, he's the guy who caught all those Hail Mary bombs for BYU this past year at the beginning of the season. Who did they beat there? I'm trying to remember. Anyway, he was the recipient of them. Obviously, a guy who can go up and catch a box out and catch a football. And he showed that. And the Packers themselves had won a few games on Hail Marys of their own. So just kind of interesting connection there for what it's worth. Probably not a whole lot. But one of 30 players the Packers bringing in recently reported that would be happening. And that pretty much wraps things up. As far as this segment,
the day ahead,
I got nothing in terms of the immediate future. Pro days are over. Everything's wrapping up from an NFL draft, you know, evaluation standpoint. Maybe the next thing we're going to find out is that they're going to hold those NFL combine medical rechecks soon. Like we were talking with Jalen Smith before, that's going to be a big, big thing. I'm not even sure the exact date of that, but that's coming up soon. Maybe they start firming up some of these preseason dates. Maybe you can look forward to that. Other than that, I've got nothing till next week. Enjoy the Masters. Enjoy watching that coverage over the weekend. There's your green and gold connection, the official colors of the Masters. So other than that, enjoy some downtime, enjoy the off season while you can, and do some other things. Do some things. Go out with your family this weekend. Not a whole lot of Packers news expected to come down the pike. Unexpected things can always happen at any time. Anyway, we'll see you, folks. It was a good talk today with Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. Follow him on Twitter at BuzzBoy3. Give him a follow. My call to action is always as usual. If you've not done so already, please give us a rating and review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask in return. This show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So if you could do us a solid, go to iTunes, search Cheesehead TV. It'll pop right up. Quick little rating review we'd greatly, greatly appreciate, because it helps us get word out about the show. That airs three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show, podcasted on demand later in the day. We'll see you later, folks. I've already got our guest lined up. It works out perfectly. Ben Fennell of NFL Films and ESPN. Worked out perfectly in terms of today with Scott McKenna. We talked about first round options for the Green Bay Packers. We're going to talk about everything outside the first round with Ben Fennell next Monday. So excited for that discussion as well. We'll see you later, folks. Have a good weekend. Have a good Friday. We'll see you next week. I leave you today with a song called Rosie by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See everyone. Go Pack. Go. Thank you.